Today's on the board, I think we have 8622. And we're actually covering quite a lot of verses today. So we're doing 21 through 28 today. And a few of the verses don't have a purport. And has the longest purport, but there are verses prior to that that have a purport too. So we'll just go through them. Before we get to 28, I'll read the various verses leading up to that, beginning with 21, text 21. Amrita padane yatna kriyatam avilambitam yasya pitasya vai jantur mirtyu grasto maro bhavet. So the translation of text 21. Immediately endeavor to produce nectar, which a person who is about to die may drink to become immortal. And then text 22 to 23. Shiptva shirodadhau sarva virutrina lato sadihi manthanam mandaram kritva netram kritva tu vasukim sahayena maya deva nirmantadvam atandritaha Klesha bajo bhavishyanti daitya yuyam bala graha. So the next, the translation, that was text 22 to 23. And the translation is, O demigods, cast into the ocean of milk all kinds of vegetables, grass, creepers, and drugs. Then, with my help, making Mandara Mountain the churning rod and Vasuki the rope for churning, churn the ocean of milk with undiverted attention. Thus the demons will be engaged in labor, but you, the demigods, will gain the actual result, the nectar produced from the ocean. And this has a purport. It appears that when different kinds of drugs, creepers, grass, and vegetables are put into this milk, and the milk is churned as milk is churned for butter, the active principles of the vegetables and drugs mix with the milk, and the result is nectar. Text 24. Yuyam tat anumodad havam, yad ichanti asuraha, suraha, Na samram bena sadyanti savartaha santvaya yata. And the translation, my dear demigods, with patience and peace, everything can be done. But if one is agitated by anger, the goal is not achieved. Therefore, whatever the demons ask, agree to their proposal. And then text 25. Na betavyam kalakudat visha jaladi sambhavat labhya karyo na vo jatu roshaha kamastu vashtushu. And the translation, it's text 25. A poison known as Kalakuta will be generated from the ocean of milk, but you should not fear it. And when various products are churned from the ocean, you should not be greedy for them, or anxious to obtain them, nor should you be angry. Purport. It appears that by the churning process, many things would be generated from the ocean of milk, including poison, valuable gems, nectar, and many beautiful women. The demigods were advised, however, not to be greedy for the gems or beautiful women, but to wait patiently for the nectar. The real purpose was to get the nectar. And then it's text 26. Sri Shuka Uvacha, Iti Devan Samadisya Bhagavan Purushottamaha Tesham Antardadhe Rajan Svajanda Gatir Ishvaraha. And the translation for text 26. Sukadev Goswami continued, O King Parikshit, after advising the demigods in this way, the independent Supreme Personality of Godhead, the best of all living entities, disappeared from their presence. Text 27. Ata tasmai bhagavate namaskritya pitamaha bhavascha jagmatu svam svam damo peyut balim suraha. So the translation for text 27. Then Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, after offering their respectful obeisances to the Lord, returned to their abodes. All the demigods then approached Maharaj Bali. Okay. And text 28, which is the one on the board, and we can chant responsibly. Trishtrarin api asamyatan. It's not. 22 is on the board. Okay. Somehow, I don't know why I was thinking that the last verse was put there. Okay. So 22 we'll chant together. So I'll just read then text 28. So text 28. Drishtvarin api asamyatan jata shoban svanayakan miyase had datya rat shlokaya Sandi Vigraha Kalabit. So the translation for text 28 is, Maharaj Bali, a most celebrated king of the demons, knew very well when to make peace and when to fight. Thus, although his commanders and captains were agitated and were about to kill the demigods, Maharaj Bali, seeing that the demigods were coming to him without a militant attitude, forbade his commanders to kill them. In the purport. Vedic etiquette enjoins Grihe Satram Api Praptam Vishvatam Akadobayam. When enemies come to their opponent's place, they should be received in such a way that they will forget that there is an animosity between the two parties. Bali Maharaj was well conversant with the arts of peacemaking and fighting. Thus he received the demigods very well, although his commanders and captains were agitated. This kind of treatment was prevalent even during the fight between the Pandavas and the Kurus. During the day, the Pandavas and Kurus would fight with the utmost strength, and when the day was over, they would go to each other's camps as friends and be received as such. During such friendly meetings, one enemy would offer anything the other enemy wanted. This was the system. So back to 22. Okay. Shitva Shiro Dadao Sarva. Please chant. Virutsa Trina Latan Sadihi. Mantranam mandaram kritva netram kritva tu vasukim Shetva Shirodatao Sarva Viru Trina Latao Sarihi Mandanam Mandaram Kritva Netram Kritvana Tu Vasukim Shetva Shirodatao Sarva Viru Trina Latao Sarihi Mantanam Mandaram Kritva Netram Kritva Tu Vasukim. Please chant. Shetva Shiro Dadao Sarva Viru Trina Lato Sarihi Mandaram Mandaram Kritva Netram Kritva Tu Vasukim Shetva Shiro Dado Sarva Viru Trina Lato Sarihi Mantanam Mandaram Kritva Netram Kritva Tu Vasukim Shetva Shiro Dado Sarva Viru Trina Lato Sarihi Mantanam Mandaram Kritva Netram Kritva Tu Vasukim. Okay, I'll reread 23, because 22 and 23 are in one. Sahayena Maya Deva Nirmantha Vam Atandritaha Klesha Bajo Bhavishyanti Daitya Yuyam Falagraha. So the word for word, Shiptva, putting, Shira Udadao, in the ocean of milk, Sarva, all kinds of, Virut, creepers, Trina, grass, Lata, vegetables, Ausadhi, and rugs, Manthanam, the churning rod, Mandaram, Mandara mountain, Kritva, making, Netram, the churning rope, Kritva, making, Tu, Bat, Vasukim, the snake Vasuki. And I'll carry on with the word for word for 23 since they're together. Sayayena, with a helper. Maya, by me. Deva, all the demigods. Nirmanthadvam, go on churning. Atandritaha, very carefully, without diversion. Klesha Bhaja, share takers of sufferings. Bhavishyanti, will be. Daitya, the demons. Yuyam, but all of you. Falagraha, gainers. Gainers of the actual result. And the translation for 22-23. O demigods, cast into the ocean of milk all kinds of vegetables, grass, creepers, and rugs. Then with my help, making Mandara Mountain the churning rod and Vasuki the rope for churning, churn the ocean of milk with undiverted attention. Thus the demons will be engaged in labor, but you, the demigods, will gain the actual result, the nectar produced from the ocean. And the purport is extremely short. It appears that when different kinds of drugs, creepers, grass, and vegetables are put into the milk and the milk is churned, as milk is churned for butter, the active principles of the vegetables and drugs mix with the milk and the result is nectar. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Ramapada Swami Iti Namine Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschitya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So, here's Sukadev Goswami, who's explaining how the Supreme Personality of Godhead advised the demigods. So, having been pleased with the prayers that they had offered, specifically there were prayers that Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma had been offering, so this is the advice the Supreme Personality of Godhead is giving, they were to endeavor to produce nectar, which a person who's about to die can drink in order to become immortal. So in this particular verse, there's mention, and this is the advice that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is giving to the demigods. He's saying, with the addition of different kinds of drugs, creepers, grass, and vegetables, the churning of the milk in the same way that milk is churned into butter, that mixture with the active principles of these additional components would produce nectar. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead was also explaining that simultaneously with the churning going on, the whole ocean of milk would also be producing some poison. And in addition to the poison, there would be valuable gems, the nectar itself, and also a beautiful woman coming from the churning. So he gave very specific advice to the demigods. He advised them not to be greedy for the gems, very specifically, or for the beautiful woman, but to patiently wait to get the nectar. His advice, too, was that the demigod should not become angry if there were any disturbances. So it was very specific instructions they were receiving. Just to try and understand a little bit of the relationship between the demigods and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Earlier on in their prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demigods had made a statement about themselves. This is how they saw themselves. So I'm going to quote what they said of themselves. Since our bodies are made of sattva gun, we are internally and externally situated in goodness. So that is how they've seen themselves. So I'm quoting directly what they say of themselves. So, of course, this particular statement, when they made it, it was part of the prayers that they were using to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's interesting what they were juxtaposing in order to point out that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was glorious, because they actually were making a comparison between themselves and their bodily constitution, which was situated in the mode of goodness, with the bodily constitution of mere mortals, because those bodies are have the mixture of passion and ignorance too. So the so by making that comparison, they were trying to draw attention to the fact that even they, with their bodily constitution, have some difficulty in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What to speak of those, and this is their word, they use the word insignificant bodily constitution of those being in passion and ignorance. So, and this is to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, but Shiradakshay Vishnu was very pleased with their prayers, he, in fact, even appeared, and they were actually able to see his personal beauty. And in one of the previous verses, it's mentioned that Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they particularly were able to, or to them particularly, Shiradakshay Vishnu made his personal beauty visible. Now, of course, the other demigods also got to see Shiradakshay Vishnu. So, interestingly enough, and I'm putting in these things because I want to lead in a certain direction, at that particular moment when they got to see the personal beauty of Shiradakshay Vishnu, this is what Lord Brahma says. And this is from the eighth verse in the same chapter. So Lord Brahma's words: although you are never born, your appearance and disappearance as an incarnation never cease. You're always free from the material qualities, and you are the shelter of transcendental bliss resembling an ocean. Eternally existing in your transcendental form, you are the supreme subtle of the most extremely subtle. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto you, the Supreme, whose existence is inconceivable. So, it's by virtue of the fact that the Lord's body and his activities are all transcendental, which means that they're free from any pollution that comes from one's nature that forces one to act or do things according to that nature. So the Lord is transcendental to that. He doesn't run into that kind of difficulty. So he's in a position where he's able to advise the demigods. And I wanted to make a connection here because Srila Prabhupada writes that unless one is getting the help of a spiritual authority, one cannot actually understand his situation or the situation in which one finds oneself. So it's the association of the spiritual master that allows one to see one's real position. And this helps one to become free, or no, not free, helps one to become firm and secure in one's Krishna consciousness. And in that way, one isn't being controlled by that way of doing things according to one's nature. So in a similar way, we've seen this taking place here, where Shiradakshay Vishnu is sort of setting the parameters so that the demigods can remain very firm and secure in their Krishna consciousness. And they in fact are getting the opportunity by the very activity that they're being called upon to perform. They're getting the opportunity to be relieved from those activities dictated by nature. And we get a hint of what those activities would be, you know, the attraction to specific things like the gems or the beautiful woman. So we get some idea of what they're being relieved of just by virtue of the fact that they're receiving that particular instruction, which is allowing them to remain firm with what their goal needs to be. So in their particular case, it was to obtain that particular nectar. So a lot of emphasis was being put by Shiradakshai Vishnu on being fixed on the goal. So Srila Prabhupada writes something, and I'm going to quote from him. It's just a short word, sentence. One can transcend all the activities of the modes of nature simply by understanding them properly, by learning from the proper souls. And this is from a purport in Bhagavad Gita, the 14th chapter and the 19th verse. So this is the method by which one can actually transcend that pulling to perform one's activities in a way that's in accord with nature, because it may actually be diverting one from one's Krishna consciousness or the proper focus or the proper goal. So now the stage is set for the demigods to follow what they've learned from Shiradakshai Vishnu. And we see that the demigods are usually acting according to Lord Krishna's direction. And there's a definition given of from Bhagavad Gita how that action needs to be performed. So this is the statement. When one properly sees that in all activities no other performer is at work than the three modes of material nature, and he knows the Supreme Lord who is transcendental to all these modes, he attains my spiritual nature. So I'm going to read that verse in Sanskrit too, because it's very significant in this particular context. It's 14:19, Bhagavad Gita. Nanyam gunebhya kartaram yada drishtam pushyati gunebhyas chaparam veti madbhavam so digachati. The demigods, they certainly know their spiritual position because they're understanding their bodies. They told us what their bodies are, or the composition of their bodies. They understand their senses, and they also understand how there are, I mean, this word spell is often used by Srila Prabhupada, meaning, you know, the material energy affects one in a particular way that it's almost as though one is under a spell or acting under a spell. And the demigods understand that they actually are a little bit under the spell of the mode of goodness. They understand. So Shiradakshai Vishnu, he's indicating that they have to practice patience and peacefulness, because this will allow them to withstand greed and even agitation from any disturbance that comes from the demons. So naturally there's going to be disturbance because they've been in conflict, and the demons have the upper hand at the present time. So this is the advice they're receiving for how they actually can withstand some of those pushings of the nature that the greed and some agitation by being presented with those very objects that they normally are looking for or drawn to. So now, you could describe the position of the demigods through a comparison. So this is a comparison, a very nice verse that I came across that helps to explain something of the position of the demigods. The Vedic literatures are made by and meant for the Supreme Lord. The demigods are meant for serving the Lord as parts of his body. The different planets are also meant for the Lord, and different sacrifices are performed just to please him. So that's the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fifth chapter, in the 15th verse. So one can infer that the demigods are dependent on the Supreme Lord, because that's the comparison made here, or specifically in reference to them, that they're serving the Lord as parts of his body. So they being the assisting hands, if one were to look at the body metaphor, they're the assisting hands in the management of universal affairs. So they're completely serving the Lord very closely. The locus, or the different planets, just looking at this particular verse where it's helping one to understand the position of the demigods, the locus or the different planets, they're attractive because they've got different varieties of life and bliss. Bliss meaning spiritual bliss. So this bliss and knowledge and eternal life is something, if one were to generalize, that everybody wants. Of course, you can't say this to, I will add here, you can't say this to a group of children in a class, because they will counteract that actually they don't really want to die, so they're not that interested in thinking way ahead about, you know, bliss or knowledge. It's just the immediate concern. So, but generally, there is that aspiration. but it's particularly in the upper planets that such a life is progressively realized. And one is inclined, there has to be that inclination to achieve further progress on the path back to Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada describes that one can increase the duration of life with a proportionate quantity of bliss and knowledge from one planet to the other. So the proportion changes as one progresses up the planet, up the planetary hierarchy. And but in none of the planets is there eternal life. So that's the missing component in all of them. So you can see here how it's very significant, because what is at stake? A nectar that provides immortality. So that's the very thing that's missing in the planetary system of the demigods. And but there's one very special thing that is present in that planetary system of the demigods, and that is that, particularly in that high planet, that planet where Lord Brahma resides, is that one can aspire to reach the planets in the spiritual sky. There's actually a strong aspiration on the part of the demigods, even though it appears that their concern is with the nectar, still there is there's the possibility, the aspiration to reach the spiritual planets, where that missing component, the eternality, alongside the bliss and knowledge, is fully manifest. Now, this aspiration to reach the planets of the spiritual sky is usually done by some sacrifice to the Lord. And here the demigods are being instructed, even though the Lord's capable of performing the activity he's instructing, or the activity that the demigods are going to perform. He wants to enjoy some pastimes, and particularly the pastime of churning the ocean. So this is the sacrifice that the demigods have to perform. It can be seen that way because it's specifically the request of the Supreme Lord. And there's some implications with them accepting this instruction. Due to the fact that they're seeing Shiradakshai Vishnu, this indicates something interesting. It's a moment when they're all experiencing that complete self-realization. It means that both the gross and the subtle body has nothing to do with the pure self. So at that moment, they're not thinking, oh, our bodies are made of pure goodness. No. It's actually at that moment, it's a moment of self-realization. They've seen the Lord present, although divided by some distance because they're on the border of the Milky Ocean, but they are seeing him. So they're seeing themselves, the spiritual being, as well as the Lord. But the interesting thing is, the advice that comes to them at that time when they've seen the Lord is that they shouldn't become agitated by anger. It means that they shouldn't be identifying with their, either their gross body. I mean, it's not that gross, it's made of goodness, but gross relative to you know, completely spiritualized body, and their subtle minds. So that's what they've been warned against, not to see in that way. So in fact, one could say that it's the Lord removing any illusory curtains, so to speak, for the demigods to be able to realize their individual selves and to be engaged in his service. So he's removing the obstruction just by bringing to their awareness, and also the blessing comes with bringing it to their awareness and their attention that by nature tendency to get angry or greedy. So Srila Prabhupada states that when one engages in some devotional service to the Lord, then immediately that identification with one's material body, it automatically is forgotten. So it's instantaneous. And it means that one's transferring one's consciousness to the Lord. And this allows for that desire to gratify the senses to automatically stop. It's an instantaneous thing. And this is mentioned in a purport in the 14th chapter 2 in the 24th verse by Srila Prabhupada. So so what's of relevance here, I think, in connection to this particular pastime of the demigods receiving this advice from Shiradakshai Vishnu, is getting that understanding that actually when something is emerging of those particular emotions, it's actually just the modes that are operating. And one has to remain situated in the self. And that self is supported by the particular instruction or the guidance that's given by the spiritual master or one's spiritual authority, because that's keeping the allowing one to stay situated in the self, even though the modes are operating. And and here's a description, because Arjuna was interested to know how does a person in transcendence actually function. And so I'm just pulling out a little section that's connected to the discussion here. And this is the response of Krishna. how such a person is functioning. The person knows that alone, that the modes alone are active. He's situated in the self and regards happiness and distress equally, and looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold. And of course, here it's the valuable gems for the demigods, with an equal eye. So this, in fact, is the behavior of one who has transcended the modes. So the demigods come to follow these instructions. There's not, we'll I guess, hear more. But the last text for today just says that the demigods followed these instructions. And the beginning of their following the instructions was to establish a peace truce with the demons, or particular Bali Maharaj, the king of the demons. So they set, the stage has been set, they've taken the initial step, the truce. You know, okay, we're going to reach an agreement, we're going to do this particular thing, we're working together to get the nectar. So those are some thoughts on this particular little section. If there's any comment or contribution that can expand the discussion, I'd be grateful.
They're getting the nectar, which is supposed to give them immortality, but in some sense we understand that in the apart from the spiritual world, that's not possible. So it's in the sense when Krishna is saying, Vishnu is saying immortality, it's probably just extended period of life or strength, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it says immortality, so yes, I would understand it that way, because relative to any of the other planetary systems, apart from Lord Brahma's planet, the duration of life is very short. But specifically, it's mentioned that in all those planets, there's different proportions of bliss, knowledge, but eternality is missing, including Lord Brahma's planet. So indeed, it's a missing component, so the understanding would be correct. Yeah, it's only the aspiration to transcend the material modes that allows for the shift to happen, where the focus is not on remaining there in the state of enjoyment, but actually to truly directly be serving continuously the Supreme Lord. And it's only the transference to the spiritual planets that bring the eternality, the immortality. So yes, unless there's transfer to the spiritual planets, there's not the true immortality, yes. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada compares the demigods cooperating with the demons to the etiquette of Kshatriyas in the battle, where in the day they fight and in the evening they intermingle even as friends and give each other what they need. In the case of the demigods who have the bodies in the mode of goodness, this seems possible, especially because they also have that instruction of exercising patience and peacefulness in their dealing with the demons. However, Kshatriyas who have bodies in the mode of, I mean, even characteristically in the mode of passion, and during the day, they're actually fighting against each other. So in night, to provide what they need and things like that, when there's some material desire there, though they are fighting for duty. I mean, I'm wondering how this is possible in Vedic culture, particularly when, I mean, is it the case? Yeah, that's just the general question, how it's possible.
Well, there's a listing of the qualities of the Kshatriya in Bhagavad Gita, and I'm recalling that heroism and valor are two qualities that distinguish a Kshatriya. And one of the other things is that they're always willing to hear from Brahmanas. So it means that the Kshatriya will always perform an action based on the instructions having come from the Brahmana. So this particular purport is demonstrating that cordiality and the etiquette that is followed, because that's the scriptural injunction. The injunction is that one only fights within the daylight hours and performs that. It's a duty after all. The fighting is a duty. So then the duty ends, the night comes, and then one has a different activity to perform. So the activity of actually commingling with the enemy is what you asking seems, you know, somewhat odd, or how is it possible? You know, especially even in the purport it's mentioned that they're fighting with their utmost strength during the day. So again, the intermingling with the enemy, since it's Kshatriya intermingling with Kshatriya, they're operating on the same code of etiquette, so they're following the same rules. On the side of the demigods, and certainly any Kshatriya, it would be that the proper mood is shown to the enemy. That's the instruction. So they're already armed with the instruction when going there, so the behavior follows suit. And heroism and valor is means that one wouldn't do something of the nature of how warfare is conducted in the present time, because it's completely unheroic and lacking valor, where one may ambush an enemy by, you know, putting some bomb buried in the ground, and then the vehicle of the enemy happens to be moving, I don't know, to their quarters after the daylight hours, and then the vehicle's blown up. So it's not heroic or showing valor to do that kind of ambush or something outside of the regulated hours for fighting. So there's the proper heroic mood and filled with valor in how things are conducted. So it's very noble. The character has to be extremely noble. So that's what makes it possible. The character is very well developed. And a lot of it is based on, you know, having been, having that strong adherence to the advice and the teachings coming from the Brahmanas. So they don't have the qualities of the Brahmanas or the full qualities of the Brahmanas, but the heroism and the valor pushes everything along so that the advice, the understanding is made a reality. Yeah. That would be the best way I can explain. Jitendra Prabhu.
In fighting, there's a psychological makeup on both parties, and it would just seem to me that with our Kali Yuga brains, to think that people can fight each other during the day and be friends at night, it just doesn't seem to come within the realm of our nature. You know, I mean, here they are fighting to the death. You know, I mean, and if the demons were purified, they could understand the nature of the devotees. So in having these exchanges after the battle, during the day, you know, maybe they could, you know, instead of being phony friends, they could, you know, have discourses on understanding, you know, why they're fighting in the first place. So that leaves me with a little, you know, question in my mind is, it just doesn't, you know, it's not part of the equation.
Yeah, so Jitendra Prabhu, you were very much going down the same road as Jayani Tagora Hari, that it seems a little unusual that the just by virtue of the fact that the demons are engaging in some sort of dialogue, because it's after hours that is happening with the demigods, then surely there would be an exploration of why the fighting is happening in the first place, and surely that would bring some sort of change in the whole picture. Well, in this particular purport, a lot of emphasis is put on another particular quality that a kshatriya has, which is generosity. So the demigods, armed with the instruction they receive to be peaceful, to give the demons everything they want, that's the instruction they received. So they actually are being following that very carefully, generosity, being peaceful. Now, your question is looking at, okay, here are the demons, how they're responding to that. From the purport, it appears that they're highly agitated. The only one who was not agitated was their leader. And why he wasn't agitated is specifically that, again, that particular kshatriya quality of being conversant with all the rules. He was highly conversant. So there were, he had commanders and generals, but the mention is that they were very agitated. So they were barely able to control themselves. So I would imagine in such a condition, it's very difficult to have a dialogue or even be willing to hear someone. So that would be the response to your question. One can only really actually dialogue where there's, I guess, a peaceful mood. So the demigods brought the peaceful mood, but the demons were agitated. So that would immediately be a block to be able to have proper dialogue. But certainly they were quite extraordinary just in terms of immediately taking the instruction, immediately acting on it, immediately actually putting into practice what they were instructed to do. Yeah.
I was thinking that Krishna, you know, went to Dhritarashtra and tried to negotiate, but he was adamant on, you know, his sons being in charge, so there was no recourse. And Prabhupada says that Dhritarashtra was blind physically, but he was also a blind fool. But I know one devotee, his name is Dhritarashtra. Yeah, and I was questioning that, and he's a devotee from St. Louis, Prabhupada disciple. He's in India now, but that was his name.
Well, one wonders, because if Dhritarashtra's distinguishing quality is spiritual blindness, one can't imagine that that's the reason that a devotee would receive the name of Dhritarashtra. Yeah, well, he was actually, I mean, Dhritarashtra, even his secretary was a devotee. So Sanjay was giving him the proper advice, but then it's the reception on the recipient that makes all the difference. So both the demons under Bali Maharaj and Dhritarashtra, you could put in the same category, the reception was not there. So... And in fact, that's that's falling short as a Kshatriya, because the distinguishing characteristic or quality of the Kshatriya is that very firm adherence to following what the Brahmana advises. It's part of the nobility of the Kshatriya. So it would put Dhritarashtra into an ignoble category. And the same if the commanders and the generals had acted or taken their agitation further, they'd also fall into an ignoble category. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for expanding the discussion. I'm quite grateful. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Mortality means to leave life.